It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 24th day of April, 2018. This is the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Head On, no. That's still a problem. Headon.live is where we live. Headon.live is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, zany, wacky, real-time multimedia extravaganza. That is the chat room that goes with this program during the portions of the day in which the program is live, namely 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you do choose to jump in, you'll be met by Anatole and greeted by Squeaky and VP Blom and moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, is not folding space near as much with the new chat room as he was with the old one. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And the first thing we do is thank our subscribers every evening. Anybody contributing to the program gets thanked during the program. And we thank our subscribers whose contributions roll in, like, in the middle of the night. We thank them at the top of the program. And so thanks go out this evening to our two subscribers for the day, namely Pam in Washington State. Thank you, Pam. And to Jason out in California. Thank you, Jason. Now, you might recall that there was a challenge on the table courtesy of Tony in Chico. Tony was offering to double $100 worth of new subscribers. In other words, double it for the first month. The first month's subscription would be doubled courtesy of Tony and Chico. And that was assuming that we could find $100 worth of new subscribers. Thus, would $200 be a day's worth of, an evening's worth of funding? We're almost there. Thank you very kindly to Samson for becoming a brand new subscriber, and thanks to Terrace for re-upping his subscription. That means we have one more. We have one more $10 slot to get your subscription for the first month doubled, courtesy of Tony and Chico. One more brand new subscriber, and that challenge is met. So thanks to Pam, and thanks to Samson, and thanks to Jason, our subscribers for the evening. Thank you to Terrace for becoming a new subscriber. Thank you again to Samson for becoming a new subscriber. And we are $10 away from meeting that challenge. Also, I'm happy to announce that we have arrived at Fundraising Free Radio on schedule. From now through Monday, in other words, today is the 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, No. 27th, yeah, that's 4 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Monday, Fundraising Free Radio on the Horn. yay, hallelujah, glory. Because Chad stepped in earlier today. Thank you so much, Chad. And said, you know, sometimes the flying spaghetti monster just has to reach his noodly appendages out and touch people. And consequently, the deficit is closed, it's over, it's past, it's done. And we're finished with fundraising for the month of April. And that means, in turn, that Ralph's Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge has been met. Yay. So that adds another $40 into the kitty. So there that's where we are. So I don't have, apart from thanking subscribers, especially if we get one more subscriber this evening. And then that challenge will have been met. And apart from that, all we got to do is thank the subscribers between now and Monday. And no more goals to meet. And no more imploring or any of that. No more breaking up the conversation mid-stride or anything like that. We're done. We're done because it is one of the lowest. I don't have a desire for a Gulfstream 5 or a home in the country or a river of beer flowing over my grandmother's paisley shawl or anything like that. We just try to raise enough to keep things going around here, keep all the bills paid so that the program can happen, every night. Okay? Yay. Oh, it is. It's Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And we have a rich panoply of madness to wade through. We can start with the fact that the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, is in the United States, and tonight they're probably queuing up even now, maybe even earlier, given the security requirements and everything. But there, one year, 3 months, and 4 days into the Obama, into the who? What did I almost say there? 1 year, 3 months, and 4 days into the Trump regime. Geezer Disgustus has finally worked up his taste buds' courage and screwed them to the sticking place so that he can sit down to an actual halfway decent meal that doesn't involve a crappy piece of New York strip that has been rendered into something with which you could half-sole an old boot. Yes, there's a state dinner at the White House tonight. And it does not portend well. No, it really, really doesn't. Because the menu went out in advance. I mean, this is a big deal. The first Trump state dinner. I mean, this is a guy, after all, who sold meat through the mail and tried to hustle craptastic plastic bottle vodka in a glass bottle that was awful. You probably would have been better off with a can of paint thinner from the hardware store. But it's true. There's a state dinner tonight, and it caused some small degree of consternation out in the culinarily curious, and in particular, in some quadrants of the African American community. Michael Harriet, writing over at The Root, Melania Trump is serving Michelle Obama's collard greens for dinner, and we need to pray. No, really. First, Melanoma made a name for herself by plagiarizing one of Michelle's speeches. And now she's raiding her garden. No shit. Michael Harriott writes, as America frets over the Republicans' efforts to taint the Mueller investigation, the prospect of a North Korean nuclear contamination and serious use of chemical warfare against its own citizens, there is a much bigger threat of poisoning looming on the American horizon. Melania Trump is going to serve collard greens. Yes, it's the first state dinner at the White House this evening. And it has been officially published that Melania Trump is planning a first course that celebrates the wondrous first harvest of spring using greens from the White House kitchen garden. You know, the one Michelle put in, and that precious little snowflake white wingers had an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy conniption about for years and years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And this is hilarious. This is absolutely... So this is the president of France we're talking about, Emmanuel Macron. So they're thinking, if you're like me, you can almost hear Melanoma's words inside your own head, and trust me, it's not anything you want to be. That's not a gift that you want. Is president of France coming to visit? Must serve French type of food. We do not have so much French food in the United States. I know, we will serve them Popeyes, Louisiana Kitchen. Apparently, poor Stephen Colbert, since he's makes oodles and oodles of money and works for CBS, got some shit for mocking Melanoma that way. But I don't think I have to worry about that down here. It's not like I don't think the Transylvanian American Cultural Preservation Society is going to come after the horn. At least not as long as I keep wearing the fucking garlic around my neck to bed. No, this is not a joke. The main course will include New Orleans jambalaya with Carolina rice, scented with Trinity of Cajun cooking. Trinity, no crosses. Celery, peppers, and onions, spiced with herbs from the South Lawn. Here's hoping Melanoma knows the difference between the herbs on the South Lawn and the stuff growing in the garden, but I'm not betting on it. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, in case you were wondering, this is... yeah, I know this is kind of Trump gossip, but this is also Titanic. This is also Titanic Tuesday material, 200 proof. There will be no Democrats, none, invited to this state dinner. Not the minority leader of the Senate. Nor the minority leader of the House of Representatives. Not even Heidi Heitkamp or Joe Manchin, who are far more closely aligned with the Republican Party than they are the Democratic one. No Democrats allowed. Mm-mm. But all this caused Michael Harriott to write a prayer for this evening. No, it's not Wednesday, but still. Dear White Jesus, We come to you as humbly as humanly possible, asking you to look down on the Macron family and those unfortunate enough to attend Tuesday's state dinner. Lord, we know you are a powerful God. You rescued Daniel from the lion's den. You saved the Hebrew boys in the fiery furnace. You even saved Jon Snow from the wrath of the White Walkers. So, Father, we ask that you protect the stomachs of all those at the White House chewing on Melania's greens. Well, that just sounds filthy any way you slice it. Given Trump's history, we're pretty sure there are no black cooks on the White House staff, Lord. Even though I'm not too familiar with your scriptures, I'm pretty sure David wrote a psalm about not judging a book by its cover, so I'm hesitant to tell you that Melania doesn't look like the type of woman who knows about jambalaya or collard greens. But with O Notorious G.O.D., all things are possible. We ask that you touch the bellies of our visitors like the whale who ate Jonah oh so many years ago. Despite our quest for reparations, we are begging you to rain down hot sauce like showered locusts on the Pharaoh. We ask that you overlook the lamb on the menu and touch the food. After reading that the food will be scented with herbs and spices, we ask that you rain down your blessings on these poor, unfortunate palates. I don't know how the fuck one scents a recipe, but I'm praying that's just a white euphemism for seasoning. Oh, Savior, be a ham hock in the pot of their greens. Be ye a dash of Lowry's seasoned salt in their time of need. Send down your seasoning angels to intervene in this travesty as you did when Abraham pulled a switchblade on his son. I don't know much about Melania's home country of Slovenia, O Lord. It might be in one of your obscure books like Obadiah or Habakkuk. But I don't think I remember reading about Eastern European jambalaya in the New Testament. Plus, Mrs. Trump doesn't look like she thoroughly washes her greens, Lord. I bet she boils them with some obscure meat like quail hearts or Jeff Sessions' testicles, Lord. Please don't let her greens be covered with that orange stuff her husband uses as foundation. Just spitballing here, G. Diddy. You see and know all things. We ask these bubblegut blessings in the name of the Most High Snoop Dogg. Amen and amen. You can find the prayer if you want to repeat it yourself this evening over at The Root, theroot.com. Michael Harriott, H-A-R-R-I-O-T, author of said prayer. Well, I'm sure by the time the day is over, it already is a national embarrassment. Oh, by the way, not only no Democrats, no media. So we won't see, you know, Trump not eating the jambalaya, not eating the greens, and instead demanding that a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken be placed in front of him, the aforementioned New York strip steak burnt to the point of being usable as a half sole for a bit. Right. That's why no media. Right. Yep. Steve in New York, what do you want to bet that someone told Melanoma, et cetera, not to invite any Democrats because they'd say no to avoid embarrassment? Well, that's true. Would you accept an invitation to a state dinner with Donald Trump? I wouldn't go across the street to shake hands with the man. Meanwhile. Todd, Barbecue Todd down in South Carolina, Stan says, I think Melanoma contracted jungle fever and lost her mind when she hooked up with Count Chocula. Yeah, she had so much fun at Barbara Bush's funeral. She was sitting there smiling and enjoying the company of Barack Obama, a man a little closer to her own age and not prone to being bought off by Russian oligarchs or mobsters or anything. She came back and just, it's a point well taken, Todd. Scott and Punky with an observation. So we've kissed and made up with the French, huh? Not so very long ago, the righties had no use whatever for the French, remember? Back during the run-up to W's Iraq invasion and the French wouldn't play along, and right-wing radio and TV hosts crawled all over one another to be first in line to call them cheese-eating surrender monkeys? I do. And that's back when we had to have freedom fries in the house cafeteria and freedom toast and good God fearing Republicans were pouring French wine down the drain. Because Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, in the universe, forever, under God. Amen. Yes. Lee in New York, subject line, collard greens. Why do you think a person who uses other people's words as her own will use her own recipe? True enough. By the way, listening to your Melania accent, I have one question. Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street? You take the 3 train. 3! Thank you, Lee, for picking up my terrible count impression. Thank you very much indeed. Silent R. Lamar says, you know, for someone who dislikes likes blacks as much as they do, why are they serving black food? Well, it's not that it's traditionally Creole or black Southern cuisine. It's that they think it's French. No, really. Well, I don't know. Maybe we've could it be there's a correction to the no Democrats will be in the crowd? We'll have to wait for the story to load to find out. Oh yes, there will be one Democrat. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards and his wife are taking one for the team and attending the dinner. Thank you, Sparky. Our condolences to the governor and first lady of the great state of Louisiana, Stan. Thank you to Marty for pointing that out as well. He'll probably send John Kelly out for a hamburger just to tide him over through the food that he can't or won't eat. And for a non-drinker, all that toasting's going to be a real problem, too. But like I said, it's not like this wasn't an embarrassing affair to begin with. This really is a profoundly embarrassing situation. Earlier today, with the arrival of President Macron, there was a moment of icky when he went to brush the dandruff off of, and I wish I was kidding, the president of France's shoulder. No, really? And then they walked together to stand there in front of the portico there in front of the Rose Garden. And in an effort to get away before anybody could ask any embarrassing questions about, oh, Stormy or Michael Cohen or, well, anything, really. He took, and this is a visual that I'm talking about on the radio, so I understand that there are some inherent problems with it. So you're just going to, this is theater of the mind, so you're going to have to use your imagination. He took Emmanuel Macron's hand as if they were a pair of schoolgirls getting ready to skip away around the corner to share gossip and BFF stuff. And Macron's hand really didn't want to be held by Trump. And Trump just kind of dragged him along. No, come on, come on. No, I'm not. It just looked. I can't imagine the people of France are going to be happy about it. This is what we elected? Really? But then again, if it had been Marine Le Pen, he probably would, well, never mind where he would have grabbed her. One wonders if he'll try to skip away holding hands with Angela Merkel later on. That's a viable theory, Lee. Lee says, could John Bell Edwards be attending to give the Macrons someone to talk to? Conversation's a good thing. Trump only talks at people. He doesn't have conversations with people. And then at the welcoming ceremony for, like I said, this is going swimmingly all day long, so I can only imagine that the state dinner is going to be, yeah. Hey, Manny, if you can't take it, come on down. I'll fire up the acorn, man. We can do something good here. No, they had the welcoming ceremony. And so, necessarily, Melanoma had to come out for that. It's after Easter, so she can wear white. And she's back with Donald Trump, so the smile that she had on her face at the funeral of Barbara Bush while hanging out with Barack Obama, that's gone. And so instead, she looks, the look on her face at the welcoming ceremony was something more akin to the look on one of the, any, pick one, of the four presidential faces on Mount Rushmore. The only difference being that she actually had some, she wasn't, you know, limestone gray. At one point in the ceremony, the cantaloupe Claudius tried to surreptitiously, you know, kind of work his hand over to hold her hand, kind of sending his tiny tentacle fingers out to try to enwrap with one or two of hers. And instead, Melanoma just stood there until finally, after he just grabbed her hand, she didn't pull her hand away that time, and he just turned to her and mouthed the words, "Thank you." Those lovebirds, you know? Our poor nation. And the poor thing just stands there, eyes straight forward. I don't have a lot of sympathy for her. She married the man. She knew what she was getting into. And she participated in his birther racist slime. But honest to God, if she doesn't start, it will not surprise me if she starts blinking Morse code like somebody from the Pueblo incident or the Mayaguez or whichever it was. help me, you know, or just dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, 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 SOS, anything. She's the hostage who keeps her chained migration family in the United States. Like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday. Let's run down to Florida for a minute, shall we? Spring is in the air. And that means that high schoolers all over the country are nervously asking prom dates out. And it was no different for a young man in Florida by the name of Noah Crowley, a high school senior. He used Snapchat to make his plea for a prom date. And he sent it to the intended recipient, but the world somehow got a look at it. He hand-lettered a sign. Oh, it was so romantic and cute. You know, got a poster board, stenciled the letters on, and he said, "If I was black, I'd be picking cotton, but I'm white, so I'm picking you for prom?" Question mark. I know, they're just... You can almost hear the theme from A Summer Place playing in your mind, and chirping birds and butterflies fluttering about. And no. Riverview High School in Florida, acting principal Kathy Wilkes, upon being asked about it, said, "The post was racial in nature." Okay, now wait a... Okay, this is one of those art of word-knowing moments. Have you noticed that white people talking about the issues of race and racism have stopped using racist and racism and replaced it with racial? This is like the third or fourth time I've seen this in the last week. "The post was racial in nature, and administration became aware of it last night. Many who saw the post are understandably upset with its con..." Many? Not every? Well, I guess there may be a few skinhead mommies and daddies, and Klan mommies and daddies, and neo-Nazi mommies and daddies, and identity Evropa mommies and daddies, and Breitbart reading mommies and daddies there with kids at Riverview High School, because many who saw the post are understandably upset. Why understandably? How about justifiably? Correctly? Obviously? Understandably. See, we can understand them. We don't have to agree with them, but we can understand them. "Understandably upset with its contents as well as the subsequent commentary to the post. Riverview High School absolutely does not condone or support the message conveyed in this post." Okay, ma'am. But what's the message conveyed in the post? It's an if-then statement. If I was black, then I would be picking cotton. It's a logical fallacy and wrong, but still. "But I'm white, so I'm picking you for prom." Oh. So I guess they don't condone the fact that the young man's trying to ask somebody to prom? I mean, what's the message? The message is the kid is a failure of the educational system. I mean, okay, so maybe acting principal Wilkes doesn't approve of the fact that they're graduating obvious failures of the educational system. That's as close as I got. But acting principal Wilkes went on. She said, "We are focused on ensuring that Riverview High School provides a safe and secure environment for all of our students, and that, you know, even the ones who put up racist prom date posters, and that all students feel welcome, and, you know, even the racist ones, not racial, racist, and understand the value that they all bring to our school community, even the racist ones. I'm adding the racist parts all along the way, in case you were wondering. Our guidance counselors and administrators are available for any student who wishes to speak to someone regarding the issue." Student has to agree with the verb wish. Student wishes, students wish. Never mind. Maybe she was a math major. "Riverview High School has a wonderful student population, including the racist kids who make racist posters to get prom dates. And know our school will use this incident as an opportunity to have productive conversations about respect for one another." The students are a little better at this than acting principal is. Anton Kernahan said, "I think it's actually important this issue occurred at some level. It shows that racism is still alive." Notice that Anton doesn't say racialism or racialness or racial things. Anton says racism. "It shows that racism is still alive and well in our society, and it shows that racism is still alive in my generation, and it is something that we as the youth will have to continue to fight against." On the other hand, Trevor Harvey is president of the Sarasota chapter of the NAACP. Trevor Harvey said, "A strong statement needs to be made to their student body that this type of behavior will not be tolerated on any of our campuses throughout the school district, and if so, there are going to be severe consequences. When we see so many heightened race relations throughout our country," again, no racial, "our district has to take a proactive standpoint to make sure that that stuff doesn't spill off into our schools." Well, then, late yesterday, the school district itself finally chimed in and said, "Although this message is one student's opinion, we take the matter of racial relations and school safety seriously, and we look forward to working with our students and with these outside groups, have a meaningful and informative dialogue and expanded curriculum related to this important national topic." So, come May 5th, I guess young Trevor, that's his name, isn't it? Noah. Young Noah will get to go to the prom. God only knows how he'll be dressed. Maybe he'll show up in a rolling coal pick-em-up truck with Confederate flags flying all around it. And then we can have another conversation and an informative dialogue related to this important national topic. Wow. Scott and Punky, the wording kind of reminds me of a greeting card I got from my soon-to-be ex not too long before we got our tickets purchased for a one-way trip to Splitsville. "No woman has ever felt about a man the way I feel about you. It's a little vague. Yeah. It maybe if she turned him down, if whoever his intended was turned him down, he'd show up with another one that said, if I was Mexican, I'd be picking lettuce, but I'm white, so I'm picking you for prom, and ask the next girl. Who knows? Titanic intellect. And Marty says, I certainly hope the intended receiver of the proposal has the good sense to just say no. Well, I share that hope. There's more. While we were all focused on what happened at the Waffle House in Antioch, Tennessee, in the greater Nashville area, there was another event at a Waffle House a mite further to the south in, Pritchard. And Saraland, Alabama. Around what we like to call L.A., Lower Alabama. A woman went to Waffle House, placed her order. It was near the same time that all hell was breaking loose at the Waffle House in Tennessee. WALA has the story. They apparently have a fee at Waffle House. I don't go there because we don't have one. But they have a fee at Waffle House, or have instituted one, for people who want plasticware with their food. Plastic fork, plastic knife, plastic spoon. And a woman objected to the extra fee for the plastic tableware. And she told the folks at the Waffle House that she got plasticware with her meal, no extra charge. I presume it had to be a to-go order. It astonishes me that they're down to charging for plastic forks, but that was the source of the disagreement. So what did they do? What did they do at Waffle House? Well, they called 911. You know, the number that you dial for real emergencies and matters of life and death and matters of extremis. Yeah, they called 911 on her. And the police showed up and did what police do. In this instance, they wrestled Chiquisha Clemens to the ground. And then they tore her clothes off. Or partly tore her clothes off. No, I'm not kidding. There's video of the altercation, and you can see a police officer from Saraland, Alabama, Saraland, you can see the officer yanking on her arm, and they knock her to the ground, and then start disrobing her. Lorenzo Martin is a member of the Pritchard City Council. He showed up Sunday morning at the Pritchard Police Department, or the Saraland Police Department, and they just told him to get lost. Eventually, Colette Little, public information officer for the Saraland Police Department, she put out a statement. It said, "The Saraland Police Department is aware of the arrest at Waffle House and the accompanying video on the social media. The situation is being thoroughly reviewed and is under active investigation right now. Our department strives for transparency, and we encourage our community to be aware of current events." Saraland's Public Safety Director, Chief J.C. West, and the mayor are aware of the situation and are awaiting the results of the investigation. When the facts of the investigation are gathered, we will have a response. In case you're wondering, Chiquisha Clemons, black lady, Saraland cop, white guy. Hey, Chiquisha, they didn't shoot you. Count your blessings. Right? Isn't that how it works now in Merca? Pretty much. Yeah. And then, let's continue the Titanic parade. In this case, George Clayton, who is a cranky old dude, and has a long history of trolling students' social media posts. He's done it before. He used to serve on the Texas State School Board. He claims to be running for Texas State School Board again. And so, not too long back, a young man, a high school senior, by the name of Drake Johnson, posted a photo of himself on social media wearing a Harvard sweatshirt, because Drake Johnson was thrilled. He had been admitted to Harvard University. That's where George Clayton comes in. He jumped in and replied to Drake Johnson's tweet and said, "Congrats. Were you admitted on merit or on quota?" Well, Drake Johnson answered him. He didn't tell him to shut up or stop listening to your inner Klansman or anything like that. Drake Johnson acted like a sharp high school senior who's on his way to Harvard and thanked George Clayton for his congrats. Thank you, valedictorian, ASB president, world champion, good SAT, and a couple of handfuls of other involvements, so I'd think merit. Drake took the high road, but everybody knew what was going on. Because, again, George Clayton has a history. And that history is one of being kind of nastily, you know, racist. Not racial, racist. It was back on March 19th when another young woman posted about having been accepted to Brown University. And George Clayton responded by saying, "Are you qualified, or was this a quota decision?" He tweeted at another kid, "Was your admission merit or quota-based, or do you know the difference?" To another kid, he said, "Congratulations, Ivy Leaguer. However, we wary of the creepers." Oh, by the way, I guess I don't need to mention that all the kids that George Clayton tweets at are kids that are either biracial or obviously of a different ethnicity than the pasty-faced, doughy whiteness of George Clayton. So now George Clayton has gone on his apology tour. Oh, it got, by the way, it got worse. There was Cody Babineau, too. This is so weird. How is he finding these kids? To Cody Babineau, he said, "Were you admitted on merit or on quota regulations? If on merit, great job, congratulations. If on a quota number, work hard, make the best of it, and thank the merit applicant you replaced." Now, somewhere along the way, Twitter apparently got around to suspending George Clayton's account. But here's what he posted by way of apology. "What I said in my remarks was totally wrong and hugely insensitive. My shame hangs heavy in my heart. It was totally out of character for me to make such a hateful comment. I am, of course, humbled by my words and sincerely sorry for them." That's what he tweeted before people found out about the stuff he'd been tweeting at other biracial and non-white kids who had gotten into good schools. "It was totally out of character for me to make such a hateful comment." Only it wasn't. Now, if you put on your secret Trumpansy maggot white winger decoder glasses, what you'll see in the words of that was, "I was tweeting drunk. That's what we call it around here at the Clayton place. I got tweeting drunk, because that's what I do. I get a belly full, and then I gets on my Twitter, and I starts looking for dark skinned kids being all proud of how they got into Harvard and Yale and Brown and Duke and places like Vanderbilt and Stanford and what have you, and then I try to make them feel real awful about themselves. That's what it means when I get tweeting drunk." Yeah, I know. Silent R. Lamar pointing out in all caps, but I won't scream, "I feel the stupid. Like from 1935 to 1963, blacks took the abuse of the whites until 1963 to 1965. Black people finally joined as one with other whites to say enough is enough. But due to undereducating the public, 1935 is returned. White folks are clueless and will feel the pain of stupid. As regards George Clayton, Lee in New York says, "You think George Clayton was valedictorian? Does he even know what that means? What was his highest level of education? Just curious." We do not know, Lee. But we know that he figured out how to work the Twitter. And remember, if you were on the Texas State Board of Education, that probably means you had a hand in crafting some crummy textbook that says that black folks came over as tourists and just went out looking for jobs and happened to find some chopping cotton while they were over this way. And they liked it so much, they never went home to Africa. The secret message to Earther. Earther, you might want to scan that story to see if it's for real. The URL makes me a little bit suspicious. I got a million of them this evening. I do. Now, nobody's been able to actually find that George Clayton is a candidate for state school board again, but the question is, does his recent behavior make him more, in the state of Texas, mind you, more or less likely to be elected? Because there are some parts of Texas, I'm sure, where that is that presents serious electability. I am. I'm loaded for bear this evening. There's lots and lots of Titanic intellect. Lots and lots. Sorry, I'm just trying to sort something out here. Usually we have the Green News Report on the Tuesdays and Thursdays. Well, this is Tuesday, but there was a Green News Report. No, okay, it's just misdated. All better now, because we're at the top of the hour and thus pretty much at the end of the filibobster. By no means are we at the end of the Titanic intellect, on the other hand. Oh, no. Not even. But we've got... more stories to get into. And we will do that after the Green News Report. We can also engage in a little conversation if you wish. The number for reaching the program for just about anybody that wants to participate, except for maggots, trumpansies, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, etc. You know, Republicans, libertarians, those types. The number to reach the program is 304-574-8178. From anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And, of course, toll-free if you need us to pay the long distance. Area code 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. Okay? And they all come into the same computer. They all come to the same place. And there's only one line. So, yeah. Note coming in from Brian. I'm Mr. Clayton, and I tried to shake and bake up an apology, and I failed. Yeah, that is rather an epic fail, isn't it? So, courtesy of Ron in Raleigh, who says, I haven't sent you a bumper in a while, so a long-distance dedication goes out to the President of France and his lovely spouse. Yes, indeed. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
C'est une poupée qui fait noir. C'est une poupée qui fait noir. Toute la journée, elle fait noir. C'est une poupée qui fait noir, non, non, non. Toute la journée, elle fait noir, non, non, non. Elle est tellement jolie que j'en rêve la nuit.
Everybody dance.
Hey.
It's Tuesday, April 24, 2018.
Mr. Hart has no clients that has business before this agency.
Contrary to denials, lobbyists tied to EPA chief's condo did lobby the agency.
So, yes, I'm going to send them a check for the monies that America had promised.
Former New York Mayor Bloomberg donates $4.5 million to help U.S. keep Paris Climate Accord promise. Court reinstates fines for automakers that violate fuel economy standards, plus...
Using natural thermometers such as measurements of tree rings and ice cores, man says he has been able to calculate ancient temperatures to a fraction of a degree.
The 20th anniversary of the famous hockey stick graph.
All of those anniversaries and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
But one thing is certain, the heat is on. Global temperatures for the first 3 months of 1998 were the warmest on record.
Are we still playing that record? Yep. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, EPA Chief Scott Pruitt leading our Green News Report. Yet again today?
Oh, yes, he is. New revelations suggest that Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt was less than forthright when defending his below-market rental deal from the wife of an energy lobbyist in Washington, D.C. In an interview with Fox News in early April, Pruitt claimed that renting from a lobbyist was not at all a conflict of interest.
Why does it matter when the ethics officials look at the lease and the terms of the lease to determine whether it's ethical
or not? Why does it matter? It's because you're renting it from the wife of a lobbyist.
Yeah. Who has no business before this agency.
Hold on a second.
Mr. Hart has no clients that has business before this agency.
Turns out that's not true.
What?
The lobbyist in question, J. Stephen Hart, resigned from his lobbying firm on Friday after new lobbying disclosures showed that Hart did indeed lobby the EPA while Pruitt was leading it and was actually present in at least one meeting with Pruitt in an official capacity.
So the lobbyist had to quit for doing his job. The EPA chief, he has yet to quit, even though he's wildly corrupt.
Right. Hart denied that the meetings met the definition of lobbyist, but said he was retiring earlier than previously planned. A small but growing handful of congressional Republicans have joined congressional Democrats in calling for Pruitt to resign.
They can call all they want. Apparently, he's not answering the call.
A win for consumers and the environment. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals ruled on Monday in favor of environmental groups by rejecting a Trump Department of Transportation attempt to delay fines levied on car manufacturers who violate federal fuel economy standards for cars and trucks. The fines had finally been updated to account for decades of inflation. In the meantime, the department has announced it plans to repeal those fines altogether. Meanwhile, former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg said he has volunteered to pay $4.5 million to cover a portion of the U.S. commitment to a United Nations fund to help developing countries deal with the impacts of global warming. That was part of the Paris Climate Agreement. The U.S. had pledged $3 billion to the United Nations Green Climate Fund, but President Donald Trump reneged on that deal when he announced his decision to withdraw from the accord. In an interview with CBS News, Bloomberg said he feels a sense of responsibility.
America made a commitment, and as an American, if the government's not going to do it, we all have responsibility. I'm able to do it. So, yes, I'm going to send them a check for the monies that America had promised to the organization as though they got it from the federal government.
Well, he's going to send them $4.5 million of the $3 billion that we had promised, but we appreciate the effort.
Indeed. Finally, this past weekend marked the 20th anniversary of the publication of the famous hockey stick graph by climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann and his colleagues in the journal Nature. Mann's study used tree rings and ice core data to reconstruct past climate temperatures and showed that the planet's temperature had been relatively stable for 500 years and then, in the 20th century, dramatically and suddenly spiked upward like a hockey stick. Here he is in a 1998 CBS News report.
We believe we are seeing the effect of human beings on the climate of the 20th century.
The graph's publication in 1998 also marked the launch of an unprecedented attack campaign funded by the fossil fuel industry that attempted to discredit Dr. Mann and all climate scientists in order to confuse and mislead the public about the dangers of global warming. Since the release of the hockey stick graph, the science of man-made climate change has only gotten stronger, as have the real-world impacts. And now the oil industry is beginning to face mounting climate liability lawsuits.
And they continue to face Michael Mann, who continues to push back. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. No, I'll stand my ground. Won't be turned around.
11 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, the 24th of April, 2018. Silent R. Lamar sent me an email apologizing for calling two nights in a row, but there's no need to apologize, Lamar. What's going on?
Hey, I'm sorry, dude. I know it's against protocol, but it's like this. America needs to understand that the state that buys the most books dictates what the educational premise is. And right now, Texas is the state. I don't know how they're doing it, but they got the
Well, Texas and California, they're in competition.
Right. I'm hoping that California or New York gets involved because your education was under California or New York rule.
Well, I remember as a kid taking the California Achievement Test.
Okay. I'm not arguing the point.
I know that. But, I mean, yeah, little kids in Alabama, we took the California Achievement Test.
And look at you. You're such an amazing product of public education.
California wasn't very good at teaching me ciphering, Lamar. That's just a fact.
Well, you know what? Like I say, there's a joke in California at certain high schools. You went to certain high schools, you're not a math major. So I know your pain. But, you know, what I'm just saying is really basic. Whichever state has the most with the books dictate. And right now, Texas, with the religious right in Texas, they're trying to rewrite history.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I mentioned that business about, I mean, there was one Texas school book that referred to enslaved human beings as workers, you know, just workers.
Right. So just imagine the kids that have listened to that and have been indoctrinated to that stuff. They are ruined because these are the same kids and people that we're seeing right now, like the young man who put up the prom picture. I feel for him. I'm not defending him, but I feel for him because I think he wanted to date a woman of color.
Well, we don't know that.
I know we don't know that, but then I've heard also seen that he apologized for what he did. I don't know the full intent, but I blame it on his education, because if he knew how minorities were treated in America before he was born, he would not have done that.
Well, you know, that's a okay. Let's kind of unpack that for a second. I get that I have a different historical frame of reference than, say, you know, my kids do. And the youngest one is 21 now.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you live in America and not know any damn thing about the history of our country?
Well, if you listen to Fox News, which is in every truck stop in the world, you'll never know.
Yeah, but, I mean, news channels aren't history channels, Lamar. I mean, I'm not arguing with you, my friend. But we're talking about, I mean, and maybe this is my bubble, okay? because I pay it. I want to know about the place where I am. If I go somewhere I've never been before, I will annoy Agnes right out of her mind, because I stop and read every damned highway marker, roadside historical marker that comes up. I've annoyed Ferg on trips, because we'll blow past one and I'll just see the title and I'll go, Ferg, get on your phone, look up, you know, Virginia historical marker and give the title, and he'll read it to me. The same thing happened over here. I mean, obscure shit, okay? It's curiosity, Lamar. We're talking about generations of Americans who have been raised to be deliberately incurious.
That's the bottom line. That's what I was about to get to. We have been trained. They have been trained not to question authority. And that's the bottom line. This is why totalitarianism is going to get a foothold in America until the Americans realize they don't like it. Hopefully it won't be too damn late. Because I have kids right now. They won't read nothing. They won't look up nothing. They expect me to tell them what they're supposed to know. And if I choose not to tell them all that they need to know, I'm sending out inferior individuals who will be pillaged and raped by the system. It's easy to, like I've said to a lot of my colleagues, it's really easy to lead a group of stupid people. But one thing about stupid people, they're violent. When the last time, I said this to you before, but I'm going to say it again. When the last time you seen two well-educated individuals have a fight?
No, I know. Look, and there's a story out of Mexico, and it's a heartbreaking story. Three film students from Guadalajara were working on a student project in Mexico. And this is about violence and ignorance, not about Mexico or the United States.
Right.
They were set upon by a group of people who, in their meanness and their ignorance, assumed that they were members of a rival gang. And they murdered the three film students and disposed of their bodies by burning them up with acid. And then dumped what little bit was left of the remains. And the director who recently won the Director Academy Award for The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro, was tweeting about it and just sickened by it. But, you know, that again, that's not because Mexico. That's because mean, stupid, and greedy. And,
right.
Of course, because of America's war on drugs, because the cartel that they were, the gang they were a member of, is all about drugs. And if there was no massive desire for drugs in the United States because of the prohibition on them, the cartels would not exist.
True. But it also, like I say, by me living in California, I truly understand the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which gives Mexico citizens dual citizenship in the United States. This is why I laugh when they talk about building a wall along the Mexican border. You're going to have to get rid of the treaty first before you can do that shit. But since Americans do not know about the treaty, they buy into the hoopla of build the wall. That's why the wall is not built. They can't build the wall because of the treaty. Mexico has the right, Mexicans have the right of dual citizenship in America. All they got to do is do 6 months here and 6 months over there, and they meet the requirements. But see, if we as Americans were educated in the treaties and the stuff that we have gone into, they couldn't do this racial split and keeping us at our throats while they pillage us. Because we're so occupied with fighting one another. It's like I said once before, squirrel, look over there. Oh, shit, the squirrel got a gun. Now run.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm just being real with you, dude. That's where we at. They throw up smoke screens, all this other stuff to defuse us into looking at what's going on. My father played dominoes. And I remember this day when we were playing, he said he suckered my friend into a play. And he told him, you're eating acornuts and you ain't looking up to see who's dropping acornuts. And you get that because you're from that era. You're from that side of the country. They're dropping fruit down for us to eat. And like Rockefeller said back in the 60s, as long as we keep them full, happy, we can do whatever we want. Reagan changed that. He made us start looking up at where the food was coming from. Just like with rats.
Yeah, you mean as it was trickling down?
Oh, man, you know what trickle down mean. I mean, if you do the experiment, take a piece of wood, point it at a 45-degree angle, and pour a little water on it. See how much water gets down to the bottom of that wood? None. And the other part of the conversation that I'm going to get off is we as a country have lost the ability to use common sense and logic. It's not being taught in school. This is why they hate all the professors at the universities, because logic is one of the things they stress. And critical thinking, oh, that's a loss. That's a dead subject. That's like looking at the Egyptian scrolls or the whatever those scripts that they found at the Red Sea. I mean, hieroglyphics, that's what comments, that's what that's at. I've used up your time.
You're doing fine, but I appreciate the call, Lamar. You have yourself a good evening.
Yeah, I didn't want to be on that long, so, you know, I want other callers to get in. I like to hear other people.
All right, you take care now.
But okay, you have a good one, too.
All right, bye now. That's our buddy Silent R. Lamar from out in Southern California, who, in addition to, being a teacher of tremendous patience and longstanding, has a lot of common sense. By the way, whenever you mention Mexico, the idea of immigration comes up, and there's a German immigrant family in the UK, and they just had another anchor baby. As yet, the little princeling does not have a name. But Kate and, what's his name? Not Harry. Willie, William. They had their third kid in almost as many years. But here's the fascinating thing. The royals... It cost the people, because, you know, the neat thing about universal access to health care is that everybody gets it. And so the royal family, those German immigrants, second, third, fourth, fifth generation, whatever, they didn't have to pay to birth the new welfare recipient. And it cost the people of the UK about $8,900 to bring the baby into the world. At the Lindo wing of St. Mary's Hospital in London. And, of course, they had a lovely, lovely time there. The Lindo wing of the St. Mary's Hospital in London, among other things,
They have complimentary champagne toasts to go with the gourmet hospital food that they serve there. One wonders what gourmet hospital food tastes like. I imagine it still tastes rather like hospital food, but it's gourmet because it's a little princeling. But no, it cost him about $8,900 to have the baby. On the other hand, if you're just an ordinary American increasing the species over here, you're on the hook to about $11,000. And the people of the United States mostly don't carry that. Because, of course, we have a system, a for-profit system, that states very clearly that the profits of hospitals and health care, health management, health insurance companies are more important than the people of the United States themselves. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to Will and Kate. Hopefully they will be somewhat slightly better human beings than Will's daddy. You know, Prince Chuck. Last week, there was an event held in the UK called the Commonwealth People's Forum. The itinerary for one particular day was Politics of Hope, Taking on Injustice in the Commonwealth. And it occurred before the meeting of the Commonwealth heads of government. Leaders from 53 countries who represent a total of about 2 billion people on this planet. And so Prince Chuck showed up, and he was in the... And they went down the line, shaking hands. Yes, yes, pip, pip, cheerio, glad to see you. Oh, well, that's Marvin. Until he got to Anita Sethi. And he Anita Sethi shook his hand. And she said... she told him that her mother was born in Guyana, and that the book that she was holding in her hand, We Mark Your Memory, Writing from the Descendants of Indenture, was a collection of preserved history about people who had been who had spent their lives, or some portion of them, in indentured servitude. At which point, okay, so she said, my mom was born in Guyana. And Prince Chuck can be forgiven. He is, after all, Prince Philip's son. And Prince Philip is a notoriously racist old bastard. You know, it all starts in the home, as as our kid's fifth grade teacher used to say. So she says, my mom was from Guyana, and Prince Chuck replies,
and where are you from?
And Anita Sethi said,
Manchester, UK.
To which Prince Chuck responded,
well, you don't look like it.
Because, of course, Anita Sethi isn't all pasty and doughy and, you know, somewhere between pink and red-faced and right. She's a woman of brown skin.
And where are you from?
Manchester, UK.
Well, you don't look like it.
Oh, if there's any justice,
maybe Chuck won't ever actually get to be the king. And that, well, maybe it'll just skip a generation. Skip a bit, brother. Down to maybe Will and Kate, who seem to be making a passing attempt at being decent human beings. Might be a bit much to hope for. Oh, by the way, we missed a holiday yesterday. Because it was Monday, the holiday fell on Monday. It actually happened over the weekend, but since they were state holidays, they were observed yesterday. Mm-hmm. In Georgia, yesterday was simply state holiday. No, really, the state of Georgia has an official day when government functions in the state are shut down, and they just call it state holiday. It's been called state holiday since 2015. Because before 2015, it was known as Confederate Memorial Day. I had it backwards. The actual day falls on the 26th, but it was observed yesterday. It was in the aftermath of the slaughter at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina, that instead of striking Confederate Memorial Day, and let's remember, let's be honest, there aren't any living descendants of anybody who died in the Civil War, so it's strictly symbolic and ceremonial. It's a symbolic and ceremonial remembrance of people who fought in the war to be able to continue, for their, you know, economic betters to be able to continue to own slaves and perhaps themselves as well. But Confederate Memorial Day was observed in Georgia. And the entire month of, there was a Confederate Memorial Day still is observed in Mississippi. And who else would observe Confederate Memorial Day? Why, yes, of course, Alabama. 153 years since the Confederate Army acknowledged that it had had its ass whipped quite thoroughly. They're still observing Confederate Memorial Day in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi. Heritage not hate, y'all. And even as recently as the last year or so, at least one lawmaker in Georgistan has been trying to restore the Confederate Memorial Day name to state holiday. And in the legal language that was used by Representative Cletus T. Sister Fister. He said he wanted a holiday to memorialize, this here's a quote, 4-year struggle for states' rights, individual freedom, and local government control. Local government control of whom? Or what? One might ask. And a 4-year struggle for states' rights and individual freedom. Except the individual freedom of the people that they went to war to keep from having, you know, individual freedom. Or any freedom at all of, you know, any sort. Yeah, I know. I know. The work remains to be done. does it ever. Well, I think that is succinctly put. Robert in Australia writes and says, their heritage is hate. Yes, yes it is. Albert in Rhode Island says, do you think Dope 45 knows about the treaty that Silent R. Lamar spoke about, Guadalupe Hidalgo? I doubt it. I'm not even that up on it. I'd have to read it to find out if, and then I'm not saying I doubt Silent R. Lamar, but to find out what exactly the provisions are, I'm imagining that it probably conferred dual citizenship upon the people who were alive at the time of the signing of the treaty. Although there may be an argument contrary-wise. Speaking of the topic that has thus far had a great deal to do with Titanic Tuesday, let's go to York, Pennsylvania, and the Grandview Golf Club. Now, being a golf club, the Grandview Golf Club near York, Pennsylvania, well, they have memberships, and you have to pay for the memberships. And when you play golf, you have to learn the rules of golf etiquette. Like if you're say you're a four, you know, you don't do more than a foursome. And if you're a foursome and you got a twosome behind you, you just step off to the side and wave your arm and invite the twosome to play through. That's the term for the non-golfers out there, to play through. And golf is historically not only wildly racist, but also misogynist. Don't get me started. Dirty jokes and reference and segregated spaces in the golf club where men can go but women can't. And I'm not just talking about the locker rooms. Well, there at the Grandview Golf Club near York, Pennsylvania, Sandra Thompson and four of her friends got together for a round. All of them were members of the Grandview Golf Club. And they were playing, at least according to the golf pro there at Grandview, they were playing on a pace with the group in front of them. Because you've got to kind of space it out on the golf course because you don't want to be raining tee shots down on people who are 200 yards out in front of you hitting their second. That's what that whole yelling four business is all about. It's considered bad form to drop your shots in amongst the group ahead of you. It's downright offensive. So Sandra Thompson and Sandra Harrison, another member of the group, were making sure that they were playing within the within the accepted confines of the situation as it existed, because they had a foursome in front of them who were holding up play too. And the pro told Sandra Harrison, "Nah, you're fine. You can't make them go any faster." And at one point, the women even went so far as to just skip the third hole that, bear in mind, they'd paid to play. Because the son, the father of a guy who co-owns the club, came up to him and said, y'all are playing, wrong accent, York, Pennsylvania. Use guys are playing, what, is it use or is that Pittsburgh? No, that's Yens. Use are playing too slow, and you're holding up the game for the other folks. So that's the situation. That was the situation when, again, using a communication system that is designed for emergencies and matters of extreme danger and life or death situations and extremis, the father of the owner of the club dropped the dime, called the police, and tried to have the women arrested for slow golfing. This is ridiculous on its face. Some people would say golf is ridiculous on its face. Mark Twain said it was a good walk spoiled. This is the part where I ask the question, do I need to mention that the women who were playing golf were all African-American women? I probably don't. But they were. And in fact, Sandra Thompson is a lawyer. And she's actually the head of the NAACP chapter in York, Pennsylvania. And they've got a group, these women do. They call themselves Sisters in the Fairway. They've been playing golf together for about 10 years, at least. And they're pretty serious golfers, as amateurs go. They travel with their golf bags, and they play golf wherever they go, and they like to go to the nice courses, and with the clipped greens and the bent grass, and you can tell which way the putt's going to run based on where the water is, and all of that stuff. And so they know their golf etiquette. And the guy in question is former York County Commissioner Steve Chronister. His son, Jordan Chronister, is a co-owner of the golf club. And when they took a break at the ninth hole, which is, you do that. You get done with the ninth hole, you go to the grill, you get a hot dog, drink a beer, whatever. That's what these women did. And that's when Jordan Chronister and Steve Chronister and a bunch of other white male employees of the club all went over and told the women they've been taking their break at the ninth hole too long, too, and they need to get on out of there and leave the course. Meanwhile, the guys behind them, they were still sitting over there swilling beer and hadn't made any move whatsoever to get to the 10th tee. Is there a happy ending to this story? Well, here in the new 90 states of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, in the universe, forever, under God, we have what counts as a happy ending because none of the women were killed when the police showed up. None of the women were even arrested when the police showed up. Northern York County Regional Police Chief Mark Bentzel said, "We were called there for an issue. The issue did not warrant any charges. All parties left, and we left as well." On the other hand, the other co-owner of the club, J.J. Chronister, Jordan Chronister's wife, she knew how nasty that situation had been. And so on Sunday, she called each of the women who, let's remember from the beginning of the story, were all members of the club. And J.J. Cronister said, "We sincerely apologize to the women for making them feel uncomfortable here at Grandview. That is not our intention in any way." "Well, it was your husband and his daddy's intention, ma'am. We want all of our members to feel valued and that they can come out here and have a great time, play golf, and enjoy the experience." Sandra Thompson, on the other hand, said, "Well, I don't know what the meeting's going to do." She said, "There needs to be something more substantial to understand they don't treat people in this matter, in this manner." Oh, God. And see, these, if I had one of these sorts of stories every month or so, well, then you go, "Ah, look, it's a country of in excess of 300 million people. In 300 million people, you're going to have a fuck-up here and there." Just like little Jemmy Madison said, if men were angels, they would not need government. And these are definitely some non-angels. But it isn't an isolated story every month, or 2 months, or 3 months, or so. And these aren't stories that are coming from the weird far corners of the fringy internet. That particular story came from the Associated Press. Who, you know, vets their stuff and tries to make sure they're getting things right. They weren't offering any judgments. They checked in. They backgrounded the different assertions that were made. They tried to explain in the story some of the basic rules of golf, and because it's not, you know, It's a game that's spread out over acres and acres and acres of ground. You know, our buddy Ron in the far frozen north is no slouch golfer. I've been around the track with him. Had I been medically allowed to, I would have swung a club too, but I've been forbidden from it. So we just played and talked, and you know, and I told him to improve his lie a couple of times. But Ron's been a marshal at tournaments, and he knows the rules upwards, backwards, down, sideways, diagonal, whatever. And anybody who plays the game fairly routinely knows that you're gonna get in. You know, if you go out to play on a Sunday when the weather is nice, especially early in the season, when every golfer in the region is going, "Oh, I'm gonna get a round in today. Damn, hot damn, goody." It's habit forming, it is. Because it's a game that's played more between your ears than on the course. It's really, really quite the Zen sport. But you're going to have days when, you know, when the course is just backed up. And you can either get upset about it and carry on, and that'll ruin your game. Or you can sit back and relax and, you know, wait till you take your next shot, make the best of it, and enjoy the day. But there at the, what is it, Grandview Country Club, Grandview Golf Club, whatever, in York, PA, it doesn't take tremendous powers of deduction to see that a bunch of cranky old white men were pissed right the hell off by having women of color playing in front of them. Jim asked the question, what about playing through? And I kind of explained that. Playing through will work and is an appropriate, it's an etiquette thing. You say, hey, there's four of us, there's two of you, we'll stand aside, you come on, you play through. Or better yet, it happens at the tee. But the golf pro had already made it clear that playing through wasn't going to help anybody because there was a foursome in front of these women. And you can't just play through everybody. Playing through is something that happens when there is isolated slow play. And that was not the situation here. There was a foursome ahead of them and a foursome ahead of them and a foursome ahead of them, probably because there's not just a shit ton of golf courses in York County, PA, most likely. And since that's a club, if you belong to the club, you go to the club. So it was just a day when the course was crowded. But as I read the story, I could hear the Bud Light cans being cracked open back there in the Chronister party. Daggum women. Slow golfing. Oh, I miss the good old days. And called the police? And they called the cops even after the incident in Philly, which is not that far from York, had taken place in the previous week. Were they inspired?
Well, we'll just call the police. They'll come. They'll put handcuffs on these black women. We've seen what they did in Philadelphia there. Hot damn, good for us.
I wish these stories were stories that I got once every 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months, but no. How about the ironically named Cracker Barrel restaurant? And this is a West Virginia story, so, oh well. Cracker Barrel in Cross Lanes, West Virginia. I've been there. And the story involves a 57-year-old man named Randy Freeman, who owns a motor coach company. In other words, you know, those big luxury buses that take tour groups here and there, and right? Randy Freeman, in addition to owning the motor coach company, well, he's also a veteran. And at the Cross Lanes, West Virginia, Cracker Barrel, he and the passengers in his motor coach were having dinner. And the manager and the assistant manager came up to Randy Freeman and accused him of cursing at a waitress. Randy Freeman denied having done any such thing. Three witnesses also said he used no such words with the waitress. And then, to make matters worse, Cracker Barrel, when there was an attempt made to resolve the situation, Cracker Barrel failed to respond, forcing Randy Freeman to engage in legal proceedings. Filing a complaint with the federal government. Dateline, Charleston, West Virginia, April 23rd, 2018. A 57-year-old African-American Air Force veteran, Randy Freeman, sole owner of Williamsburg, Virginia-based Distinguished Executive Transportation, LLC, awaits a federal court decision relating to his tort of outrage, defamation, and racial discrimination claims against Lebanon, Tennessee-based Cracker Barrel Old Country Stores, Inc., NASDAQ, CBRL, for ousting Mr. Freeman from one of their stores under false pretenses. Shortly after Mr. Freeman arrived and ordered food from a waitress at Cracker Barrel store number 193 in Cross Lanes, West Virginia, a store manager ejected Mr. Freeman and falsely accused him of cursing at said waitress. The witness at the table, clients of Mr. Freeman, who had only recently met him during the encounter, attested to the fact that he merely ordered his food in a normal manner. The store manager, along with an assistant manager, however, ordered Mr. Freeman to leave the store. Oh, we might have. Looks like we may have a one of those. Who was the woman who lied on Emmett Till, or you know, from the fiction world, and it's West Virginia, so we may have a Mayella Yule situation on our hands. Despite Mr. Freeman's numerous efforts to get any response from Cracker Barrel's corporate offices, and unlike the recent response from Starbucks Coffee Company to a similar employee overreaction to an ouster of black patrons in one of their stores, Cracker Barrel corporate employees and officers declined to respond or apologize to Mr. Freeman except via adversarial court filings. Cracker Barrel has a history of discrimination in its stores, leading to a 9-year consent decree to remedy customer and employee-based discrimination with the United States Department of Justice. Mr. Freeman expects a decision on a pending motion before the U.S. District Court in the Southern District of West Virginia in the fairly near future. Jesus. You know, when you got a busload of folks, you're actually kind of you're kind of limited in the places you can take that bus. And Cracker Barrel often has parking that will accommodate such a large outfit. You know, if it's the right kind of bus. Right? Yeah. And note coming in from Lee in New York, subject line, gourmet hospital food. Oh, wait a minute. That's cowbell worthy, because you've got a back reference in there too. How do the UK hospitals get Melania's collard green recipe? That's good, Lee. That's very good. And by the way, we have reached the third hour of the program, and if you would like to engage in some conversation, the lines are open and available to you. Scott and Punky with a note, an alternative to calling 911. With all the 911 calls to report troublesome black people to the police, They need to be immediately set up a nationwide toll-free hotline for racist business owners to call instead. This would free up the 611, the 911 system for bona fide emergencies, and it has an added attraction for stupid callers since it spells out a word that's quite familiar to them. I'll bet I know the... And the problem is, in the new 90 states of America, that line, they'd probably have to have 100 people to staff it, just because, you know... Right. Earther, with a note, says, Cracker Barrel changed their name when Sambo's became unpopular. Earther, I'm not, again, not disagreeing to be disagreeable. I remember some of that. I don't think that was Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel's always been Cracker Barrel. What we now know as Denny's was once Sambo's, complete with all the icky iconography that goes with it. Or at least some Sambo's became Denny's. But, yeah, I mean, the signage, the logo, all very similar. Meanwhile, follow up to the van attack in Toronto yesterday. Guess who didn't do it? The suspect in Toronto is Alec Manassian. And it was not a case of the ISIS trying to take down Toronto. No. Once again, it's a case of the metastasis of an American disease. Alex Manassian described himself, and again, we're using terminology, verbiage, vocabulary from disgusting white wing sites, so you probably never. He describes himself as an incel. I-N-C-E-L. Incel is a neologism that's used in the right-wing misogynist community to mean involuntarily celibate. I thought they used to just describe those as chronic masturbators, but, well, never mind. Apparently these people are dangerous because one of Alec Manassian's hero was Elliot Rodger. Remember Elliot Rodger, who slaughtered 6 innocent human beings in Santa Barbara, California, back in 2014? He was going to shoot up a sorority because he felt like he had the right to kill women because women sufficiently hot for his standards wouldn't date him. Never mind the fact that he was a creeper and who would, right? Alec Manassian, among other things, putting out a message. Private Recruit Manassian, Infantry 00010, wishing to speak to Sergeant 4chan, please. The incel rebellion has already begun. We will overthrow all the Chads and Stacys. All hail the Supreme Gentleman, Elliot Rodger. Yeah, I wish I was kidding. He also described himself as an aspiring pickup artist. They also, that segment of the right-wing sewer you know, and most of them are maggots and Trump pansies, mind you. He tries to learn tricks and ploys by which to make women engage in coitus with him. And so because this skeevy freak couldn't communicate adequately with females, he decided to kill a bunch of people with a van in Toronto yesterday. There's another sleaze merchant out there by the name of Dariush Valizadeh, who goes by Roosh V. He considers himself a teacher of wannabe pickup artists. And, of course, he blamed women for the fact that Alex Manassian murdered a bunch of people in Toronto yesterday. Alex Manassian wouldn't have killed people with a van if the media had not inoculated him and other lonely men against effective game teachers like myself. Sleeping with only two or three Toronto Tinder sluts would have been enough to stop his urge to kill. Yes, yes, that's right. Whether it be the United States or Canada, when vicious, violent, misogynistic men kill people, well, you know, it's like the line from Margaritaville. But I know, but da, 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 it's some woman's fault. Da, 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 da. Yeah, no more singing, Bob. I know. The incel and pickup artist community travels in much the same circles as the neo-Nazis and the skinheads and the some of these turds who have gone on to become quite famous got their start as a result of something called Gamergate. A sleazy attack on women for having the unmitigated temerity to want to play video games and want to see video games have some degree of reflection of, you know, women. And they sit around typing with one hand on the keyboard and the other hand down their pants. And they bemoan the fact that it's women's fault that they're not having sex. And they're lonely because women just are being mean to them. I wish I was kidding. But no, it wasn't ISIS going after Canada. It was the White Wing going on yet another murderous rampage in yet another city. Thank God. If you're in Canada, you can disagree. Can you imagine what this guy would have done if he was an American who could just go out and buy an AR-15 about anywhere he wanted to and get a few 200 or 300 round magazines and just go wild? And you heard the phrase Chads and Stacys earlier. Chads are guys that these people who, instead of learning to actually communicate with women and try to be, you know, interested in and interesting to and, oh, you know, civil, decent, not think of them. Because, look, if you're talking to a, if these guys are talking to women and in their minds, their internal monologue is calling them sluts and whores, which is what they call them online, it's going to bleed through. It'll the goddess of irony is going to, yeah. But Chads are defined as muscular men who always get the hot girls because women are so shallow, they only want hot men with washboard abs. And of course, it goes without saying with these incels that they are, they're never, their standards, as was the case with Elliot Rodgers, their standards, you know, they want what they see with the influencers over on Instagram. They have these ideals of the perfect female, and that's what they want, even though they themselves don't measure up. And so if a woman does evince some interest in them, the psychopathology in which they are submerged tells them automatically that there must, by God, be something wrong with that woman. And so they get themselves trapped in this vicious and sickening feedback loop. Going back to the Denny Sambo's, what have you, Ron and Raleigh points out there's only one Sambo's restaurant still in operation. It's in Santa Barbara, California. Denny's has always been Denny's and racist. I was once ignored at a Denny's in Fairfax, Virginia. Denny's started as Denny's Donuts and Coffee in L.A. in 1959. The owners changed the name to Denny's to avoid confusion with Coffee Dan's, another L.A. chain. My head is full of worthless bullshit. Well, that's both of ours. So, but it's not, because look, it just made the program more informative. So thanks, Ron. But I swear, I mean, we're going back to my early teen years and stuff, but I remember Sambo's, and the signage and everything was almost identical to Denny's. And I could swear I remember things that were Sambo's becoming Denny's's. Meanwhile, Arthur says, incel, it's the classical right-wing victimhood mentality. Yeah, the right-wing, you know, pinko, commie, sissy, panty-waist liberals, they want to create a victim. Everybody's a victim to them, and they're lawyers, blah, 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 blah. But as is the case with almost all things white-wing, if you spend enough time looking at them, you find out that everything that they're complaining about is a projection of how they actually feel about themselves. They're put upon. Oh, hilarious. Our friend Joy over on Facebook posted a meme the other day, and it was delightful. And if you're on the phone, stay there. I'll be there in a second. But again, we're talking about a visual on the radio. I understand. But it was a photograph of the execution of a Nazi officer in the aftermath of World War II, and he's being tied to a stake in preparation for being shot as a war criminal. And the speech bubble coming out of his mouth is a line that you get from the white wing in this country any time that you criticize Nazis or, you know, skinheads, Klansmen, you know, the Republican base. So much for the tolerant left. Oh, I laughed merrily when I saw that the other day. Thanks, Joy. Okay, let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going. How about you?
I'm good. It's what a beautiful day we had today. Oh my God.
Oh, rub it in. It's still not spring here.
Well, you know, it's spring. Like, all right, don't get me wrong. It rained for like a day and a half, like hard. I mean, there's wood everywhere on the ground. And, you know, it got to 79, 80 degrees, and it was balmy for a little while. So it felt beach-like, you know. So, hey, wow, man, you're covering all kinds of stuff tonight. My God, good grief. You remember Woodrow Wilson, right?
How could I forget?
Yeah, I know.
He and I used to play golf back in the day, and it drove us crazy when foursomes in front of us wouldn't let us play through.
Wasn't that Negro Caddy? I knew it.
Stop it.
No, but...
Always telling me to use the wrong club. By about the fourth hole, I just looked at him and said, "Give me that Canadian club."
That sounds like W.C. Fields.
That's because it's a W.C. Fields line.
That's a Philly guy. Man, I love him. I never get tired of watching him. He's so damn funny.
I was just scanning the other day, and lo and behold, what was on TCM? But my favorite, and I've got my finger, because we don't do video here, but you'll have to imagine, I got my fingers up here doing the W.C. Fields, you know, the finger thing up about my head. Because I went, oh, hot damn. The bank dick was on, Todd.
Oh, no, the classic. That shit never gets old. Oh, God. That never gets.
I happened to tune in right at the moment where he's in the bank and he sees the little kid with the toy pistol and he thinks he's getting ready to knock over the bank. And tries to apprehend him because he's got the new job as a bank dick. Mr. Soussey does, accent grave over the E.
Oh.
And the little boy says, "Mommy, that man sure has a big funny nose." And she turns to her son and says, "Be respectful, son. You'd like to have a nose full of nickels, wouldn't you?"
We forget the 20s, man. They were crazy. That was like the 60s or something. They were out there. They were smoking reefers and drinking terrible liquor, and
There's some beautiful moments because you know Shemp Howard plays the bartender in that movie.
Yeah.
At the Black Pussycat Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch carefully, I don't know if it's been changed in subsequent prints, but there were little, because it's also before the what were they called, the haze board or what are the censors?
Because they were too racy. They were getting crazy.
There's a couple of. In at least some prints I've seen on it, there's a couple of nice little dirty jokes along the way.
Oh. You know, when I was younger, I used to think they were so corny, first of all, because it was black and white, you know. But there's a lot in those older movies. I love Turner now. Turner is great. You know, and you know what makes me, like, especially the bank dick, when you... Like, I study everything. And you look at the scenery. Can you imagine, like, being in L.A. back around 1922? You know, it's wide open. L.A.
Yeah.
Huge.
Oh, yeah.
Spread out. You know, just looking at the architecture and everything, you know, that's amazing.
It's no longer an English living room drama. From here on out, it's a circus picture. You're a football player. You run up and down the fields. You make touchdown after touchdown. You know, back in the old Mack Sennett days, they said, "Soussey, you're a genius. Nights I used to tend bar." And that's my terrible W.C. Fields impression.
That wasn't terrible at all. No, that wasn't terrible. Anybody could tell who that was. That was not terrible. I was going to say, on YouTube, they have, I don't know how big you are in the YouTube, but they have...
It'll be bigger than Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. Yo, you can get some of his outtakes, you know, with, like, off-camera stuff. And he's just crazy. He's, you know, it's so funny. But, you know, I really called because since it's Black History Month and you were doing all those stories, I decided to call in again since it's Black History Month.
And if you tell me it's not, I'm going to tell you why it is.
Go, man.
Okay. It's Black History Month because of the orange fascists, you know, we had to appropriate another month just because it's just necessary.
Yeah, right. And, no argument from me.
I mean, seriously, if you don't like it, it's too bad. Sometimes you just got to, you know, just take things. You just got to do it. Appropriate. That's what you have to do. You know, so I was thinking about this guy named Alan Page, and he was a Viking player.
Oh, a member of the Purple People Eaters.
Okay, so I really didn't know the significance of him until the other day.
Supreme Court Justice in Minnesota.
Ain't that some shit? Now, this guy, not only did he go to Notre Dame and graduated while he was playing ball with those little thin helmets, he actually finished his law degree while he was playing pro ball, then became a judge.
And then worked his way up to the Supreme Court of the state of Minnesota, yes.
That's some real doo-doo.
Well, you know, I got to think that if you're arguing before the Supreme Court of Minnesota and have you look up the old footage of Alan Page playing for the Vikings? You do not want to get on the wrong side of that man. I don't care even at 70 or 75 or 80, because I think he could probably still horse collar your ass.
He looks like it. I looked at his picture. He's still solid. And apparently he's wealthy. Well, yeah, he's wealthy, and he gives a lot back to the community, you know. And so I was just thinking about, you know, that's a hero. Yeah, I don't ever hear him making any terrible tweets about people and, you know, using his influence in a bad way. But, you know, there's people out there. And what made me think of that really is listening to Washington Journal this morning. Well, but today was Jesus Day, and you know me, and like I'm Christian and everything. I'm spiritual, but you can run shit into the ground. These people, some of them sounded crazy. Honest to God, when you start saying Donald, I swear to God, Donald Trump, he sent Donald Trump to us, and he's trying to make America great. And I was like, it just made me feel. I just didn't like the feeling. It's very unsettling because these people sound insane, but they vote.
Well, yeah, they do, and they're getting more pissed off and more militant by the day. I don't know if you saw the story or not, Todd, but last week there was an account of a meeting of evangelicals, and some non-maggot evangelicals were there, and you know they all believe, you know, I mean they're Southern Baptists and whatnot, but there's two or three of them that haven't drunk the Kool-Aid. And haven't gone all Trumpansy.
Mm-hmm.
And the little snowflake evangelicals got so worked up that they had to leave the meeting because they was talking mean about our president.
Snowflake.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, there was a debate, I think, last night here in West Virginia among the primary contenders for the GOP nomination for Senate. And remember, our primary is 2 weeks from tonight, or 2 weeks from today. And they were all invited, even the ones who don't have a chance. And they did everything in their power to make sure that the Republicans in West Virginia know that they're perfectly willing to slather their own heads in Vaseline and crawl right up Donnie's dumper. I mean, it was a Trump love session. Trump love. I mean, that's disgusting.
Bob, they're playing those commercials that they're playing in West Virginia. They got the one that says "and lock Hillary up" at the end. Have you heard that one?
Oh yeah. Not surprising.
That's stupid. That sounds like something from Saturday Night Live.
Well, that's Don Blankenship. You know, this is the same guy doing that. It's the same guy who said, you know, I'm just like Nelson Mandela. No shit.
What? Oh, he did say that shit. Oh, yeah, dig that. I'm sorry.
But the best, best part of it last night was the one guy who said, "You know what? If I go to West Virginia, I ain't going to give anybody a blank check, not even Donald Trump. Only people I ever give a blank check to was the people of West Virginia when I signed up to serve them in the National Guard."
The National what?
National Guard.
Oh.
Yeah. And then there was the other guy who said, "You know, this might not..." And this is sort of like, and I don't fully understand the meaning of the phrase, mind you, but this is like white wing virtue signaling. Now, when a white winger says, "Now this may not be politically correct," what he's saying is, "I'm going to say some outrageous shit, and you're going to love it, and you're going to clap, and you're going to cheer, because this is some hateful, mean shit." So he said,
"That's the code speak."
Yeah, so, you know, this might not be politically correct, but, you know, I'm worried about our opioid crisis here in West Virginia. And you know what I think we need to do? I think we need to catch us some of these drug pushers and drug runners. And meanwhile, Patrick Morrissey, the Attorney General of West Virginia, who actually works for the company, who's worked for the, and his wife works for the companies that have pushed all the goddamn the hydrocodone into this state, sitting right there just down the way from him on the stage. "I think we need to take some..." But he ain't talking about Patrick Morrissey, because Patrick Morrissey loves Jesus, even if he is from New fucking Jersey. "I think we need to take us some of these here drug pushers and drug runners, and you know what we need to do? It ain't politically correct, but I think we need to start a waterboarding some of them."
Oh, God.
"Yeah, just waterboard them a little bit and see how they feel about it then. Huh?
Make them feel like they's over there fighting like our boy."
Wait a minute. You do redneck white guy real good, Todd.
I like the way you talk to me there, Bob.
Well, I understand.
I don't mean to pick y'all back there. Like, I'm telling you, I got that dog back there. I done locked up the cleats back there. He done been chained up.
Yeah, I got to keep him up with a logging chain because he done pulled down a 200-year-old oak tree.
Oh, man, you made me lose my train of thought. You were doing the redneck so delicately. Oh, God. Hey, this is a... Now, where were you going with this? I don't want to cut you off because it's just the actual.
Well, no, it's the Republican Party. It's how you score points. it's how you score points with the people. With the dead from the neck up crowd.
Why can't you say something nice about Donald Trump?
Well, see, that was the final question last night. The moderator, moderator who was terribly, terribly clever, said, "Well, everybody, we're out of time here at our Republican senatorial candidate debate, and I'm sorry I didn't get to ask y'all the last question, because I had one more question that I wanted to ask all of y'all, and that question was, can all of y'all please say something nice about Joe Manchin? Haw, haw, haw. Oh, that's a knee slapper. I tell you, I don't care who you are. That's funny. Say something nice about Joe Manchin. But we're all out of time, and I want to thank you good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing West Virginians for paying attention to this here debate, because Joe Manchin is a commie pinko liberal, panty-waisted Bernie Sanders friend, and likes Hillary Clinton, too. And we got to get him out of the Senate so we can start making West Virginia great again."
Wow.
Actually, I made up most of that, but the part about the last question, didn't have time to get to it. Could y'all say something nice about Joe Manchin? Haw, haw, haw. That part was true.
Where does he stand? Like you know, because he has a lot of national attention, but how do the local folks feel about him?
Kind of depends on who you're talking to. The circles I run in, most folks wouldn't pee in his mouth if his goddamn guts were on fire. But they're also going to vote for him
because it would be exceedingly stupid to replace a guy who can vote for Chuck Schumer for Senate Majority Leader with a guy who will vote for chinless Mitch McConnell for Majority Leader. And I've said all along, and I've warned all along, that the ultimate irony, and I don't want to get on the wrong side of the goddess, the ultimate irony, Todd, would be if we were successful in getting all the way to having a Senate majority, and then West Virginia fuck the whole country by electing a Republican in place of Joe Manchin, so that we fell short.
That's a little, that could happen.
Well, yeah, it could. And so Joe does everything he can to make sure that that West Virginia understands that he's just a fella that wants to find some balance that will make people understand how much he loves Jesus and Donald Trump.
He has a nice little niche because he's like right in between. But
he's his own man, and he'll vote his own way because he's all independent. The fact of the matter is, when the chips are down, he votes like a Republican. For instance, he'll vote in favor of Mike Pompeo, and he'll vote in favor of Gina, the torture lady at CIA. The only no vote he cast was he actually managed to vote against Mike Bridenstine for NASA, and he voted against Betsy DeVos at Education.
Well, that was good.
And that was because they'd already counted the votes, and he knew it was safe for him to do that.
Okay. So he's spineless. He has no conviction. He's just in a really good place.
Yeah. Well, and his primary purpose in being in the Senate is to serve two constituents: the drug companies and the coal industry. Todd, I mean, this is a man that we had to beg not to agree with the peer-reviewed science about the public health crisis in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. We had to beg him to even acknowledge that those reports existed, whether they were right or wrong, that they just existed. And he didn't want anything to do with that.
Hey, I'm glad you brought that up, because it seems to me that, I think, what is it, Purdue? Was that the company?
Purdue Pharma? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, in light of all we know now, it seems like they're being very vindictive, because they feel like, okay, fine, you know, we dumped the pills in your area, and now you're pissed off. So you know what? We're going to yank everything back. And now it's hurting people who really need it. Because what about all these old people? I remember how old people, man. Who the fuck cares if you get a drug addiction and you're 80 years old? You know what I mean? Seriously. Honest to God. They just pulled the plug, and now people who need it can't get it.
Right.
You know, you can't protect everybody, but you see, they're doing that shit to be vindictive.
Well, it's...
I don't know, that's the advocate.
Well, I think you got it right. But, Joe protects Mylan Pharmaceuticals first and foremost because his daughter, with the bullshit master's degree that she didn't really earn... It runs that outfit. Remember when Mylan ran up the price on EpiPens?
Wait a minute, isn't that the oh my God, the bee sting?
Yeah, Heather Bresch is Joe Manchin's daughter.
I forgot about that. He's going to stay in there until he's old. He's going to die now. He's not going anywhere.
It's not a given. And look, let me be clear, Todd. I wish to God, I mean, I am green with envy. I'm so jealous I can't stand it of people who live in states where they have actual Democratic senators that once in a while, pretend like they've got some progressive leanings. I mean, you know, people who get to write letters to, oh, you know, Elizabeth Warren or Ed Markey.
Yeah.
Or people who can write to Jeff Merkley or Patty Murray or Maria Cantwell. People who are represented by Bernie or Jack Reed or Sheldon Whitehouse.
Or Keith Ellison.
Well, I'm talking about senators, but yeah.
Oh, senators, yeah, he's a representative, that's true.
So, right. I mean, I'm jealous because it means that you live in a place where the senator is actually representing the interests of the people and not the interests of some godforsaken corporation. But that's, I mean, but that's not how states south of the Mason-Dixie line operate. And it's a systemic change that has got to, it's years in the making and it's years in the fixing. And this state has been in the grips of people who are referred to as the Bourbons from its very inception. And they operate on philosophies such as West Virginians will never be able to create their own wealth, so we need to invite wealth in from out of state to strip our wealth from us and throw us some crumbs along the way. And that's how you wind up with this brutalized, extraction mono economy.
And the simple folks don't know any better. All they hear is that it's going to be good for your community and all this. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And, yeah, they do that here. Well, I'm in the South, right. They pull stuff like they did back in the 20s, you know, in real places, you know. And they're still falling for the okie doke around here. You know, you bribe the zoning guy.
Right. Well, I mean, in South Carolina, if you've even got zoning. But the, you know, once upon a time, the South actually generated a few liberals here and there, although it probably wouldn't be believed if you said this to the right or the wrong people, depending on it. But they did. But they were racist liberals. I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, that's how it worked out. Now, Bob Byrd, for instance, in West Virginia, was a conservative Democrat, but he damn sure did what he could to get some money to flow downhill to his home state. And he was right. always perceived as being something more than just a shill for the coal company. Joe Manchin, there's nobody out there that thinks Joe gives a fuck about anybody but Joe, coal, and oil and natural gas and big pharma. And he's real genial. You know how they create. Remember Todd, when we created the standard back in the reign of error. That, America elected George Bush because he's the kind of feller you'd like to have a beer with. Remember that, Todd?
I do, sure.
Well, Joe Manchin's one of those like to have a beer with guys. I've had a beer with Joe Manchin.
How was it?
It was like having a beer with somebody. But I guess have a beer with standard means that he's not going to sit there and say, oh, and by the way, what do you think of the second law of thermodynamics there, Bob, while we're having a beer? God damn, Joe, don't make me think. I'm drinking beer here. You know, that's
right.
Yeah, a guy that's going to ask you science-y intelligence things, that's not a guy you want to have a beer with. You want to have a beer with a guy that you can say, God damn it, Joe, what about these Mountaineers? And, oh, well, you know, I don't know. I love my Mountaineers. Me too, Joe. Bring another round, barkeep.
Well, he seems to shy away from his intellectual side on national television.
Well, there ain't much to shy away from because there ain't much intellectual side.
Sambo done stole it. I'm telling you, Sambo done stole that man's own scent. He ain't got a witch scent.
I tell you, if his brains was gas, he couldn't fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB.
But you know what? Now that you bring it up, I remember during the summer, something was going on, as it always is. It must have been Trump-related. But some reporter asked him a hard question, and it was really a really easy question. And he did not want to make the definitive answer. He was like, well, I'm just... He started rubbing his foot in the dirt, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah, well, all shucks. Let me find some... Wait a minute. Let me get my coal mining boots on and go over here and kick some shit. And but look, he's that way because that way plays around here. He lost the Democratic primary for governor in 1996 to a woman named Charlotte Pritt, who had at the time impeccable progressive credentials. And then he and the Manchin family went over and formed, secretly, mind you, a group called Democrats for Underwood to make sure that Charlotte Pritt did not become governor of the state of West Virginia. And then later on, Joe became governor of West Virginia. And
Wait, do you mean Dirty Tricks style or just conventional, like just a blitz?
No, I mean, it was hidden, you know. Nobody was supposed to know that Joe was behind it, but the Manchins have a long history of doing shady shit like that. So we wound up with the oldest governor in the history of West Virginia, who had also at one point in time been the youngest governor in the state of West Virginia, and he was vice president of operations for Island Creek Coal Company, and he was as useless as teats on a boar hog while he was in office, but he kept that liberal woman from being governor. Now, the sad part of this is that in the years since, Charlotte Pritt has gone way downhill. She's now affiliated with the ne'er-do-well progressive rump party, the Mountain Party, that couldn't elect a dog catcher on a dare. And in the past couple of years has evinced things like believing in anti-vax, and among other things, criticizing people for following the mainstream media and then tweeting out links from fucking Russia Today.
Uh-oh.
So, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, you know, Todd?
That's it. Hey, what's up with this Sambo talk?
We were just trying to sort all that out, and Ron and Raleigh has mostly gotten it sorted for us.
I did hear that part about, I didn't know that Denny's came from Sambo's, and that's interesting.
Well, Ron's saying that they were always separate entities, but I swear I saw some Sambo's turn into Denny's, but maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe it was just a local thing. But it was Sambo's was started by a couple of tone-deaf guys in California, one whose name was Sam and another whose last name began with Bo. And so it was Sambo's restaurant, but then it got wrapped up with a bunch of nasty racist iconography.
Well, that was before my time, but obviously I know what Sambo is. And the reason that I don't like that is I remember when I was a lab assistant at one point. This is going to be real quick. But so my the PI, the principal investigator, he was not born here. But we were working with human and animal subjects. And so part of my job was to interview, you know, and run both subjects, animals and humans. But so part of my job is to sit there and chit chat with the human sub, you know, human with the people, you know, while we're before these experiments and things. So then he decides to come over, which that's not what he's supposed to be doing anyway. And I was reading the local paper, and it was when Vincenzo, I don't know, was one of the presidents of Mexico. They had a stamp, they had a new stamp, and it was a Sambo stamp. And it was just really, I mean, I was like, damn, man, what the fuck are you thinking about? And he got so much pressure, they got rid of it. You know, this is in Mexico, and that's what I was reading. And he saw the cover, And he said, oh, what you reading? I said, oh, I'm just reading about this stamp with Sambo on. And he said, oh, Sambo. Yeah, I like Sambo. And the woman, this, you know, the subject, the participant in this experiment, she looks so, and it's hard to get participants. You know, this is not longitudinal, but you still need them for a while. They got to keep coming back. You know, it's hard to get recruit really good subjects. So she looks at him, and I said, no. I hit him in the ribs. No. He's like, no, I like Sambo. And I'm like, oh, God. And she looked at him. She got up, and she stormed out. And I said to him, I said, you know, why did you say that? He said, what did you say to her? She left. That's what he said to me. You know, and I just never forget that. That's what I'm just saying, you know, you'd be surprised. People would be surprised. We see things here in this country, but because of cable and media, you know, a lot of folks are multilingual, polylingual. Many of us can barely speak English, so the whole world sees what we see. And, you know, they can speak English or not, it's translated. So I think that maybe the folks in charge, they should think about that, because it makes us look foolish. And I'm just saying, because like he thought he knew what he was talking about, you know, or maybe he did. I don't know what he was thinking about. You know, like, well, how could you even say that?
Yeah.
So...
But Cracker Barrel has its own cross to bear, because they really did. They had a 9-year consent decree with the federal government and the Justice Department over its own racist practices, and lo and behold, here's a problem arising with a guy with a luxury bus full of tourists.
Yeah, I heard you.
Yeah. Oh, I just got some breaking news courtesy of Terrace out in California, who became a subscriber today, re-upped his subscription. Breaking news, very little detail, but, you know, look, the National Rifle Association Roulette Wheel of Death has stopped on Dallas. Two police officers in Dallas, and remember, yesterday the program started with a shooting in Tarrant County at an IKEA. Two police officers in Dallas are in critical condition after a shooting near a Home Depot. Officers reportedly responding to a call to the store late this afternoon when they were shot, along with a civilian who was a security guard. The two officers are in critical condition. The condition of the civilian security guard is unknown. The scene is still active. You know what happens when that goes down? All kinds of police cars come from all over.
Terrible.
Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings has already offered thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers?
Absolutely. You got to deploy the thoughts and prayers early, Todd.
Well, bless their hearts.
But the way just that limited amount of information makes it sound like it was an ambush, which in turn points out the fact of the correctness of what I've been saying all along, that even when people have guns, if it is an ambush and all mass shootings to one degree or another are an ambush, well, then the guy who's laid the ambush is going to get to squeeze off a few rounds first.
And those folks who are carrying and think they want to be a hero and have never been confronted in that situation, everyone is not able to pull that trigger knowing that you can kill someone. And you know what happens when they freeze up? The perpetrator, the bad guy, he walks up and he takes the gun and says, you pussy, and he shoots him.
Well, and remember, these are police officers who are, I presume, since they were responding on a call, that they were wearing body armor. So that would indicate that if they are critically wounded, that they were most likely hit by rounds that could pierce that body armor. And that would be the kind of round, I'm speculating here, that comes from a military-style...
yeah, I see your point.
Semi-automatic assault rifle.
Yeah, they have no place on our streets.
No. They don't... Look, I mean, I agree with you, and I'm not trying to put too fine a point on it, Todd, but they have no business in anybody's gun safe either, or in their closets, or under their bed, or between the mattress and the box springs.
No.
Civilians do not have a legitimate need to own these weapons.
No.
We have a gun problem, but really, and I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, honestly. But if we look at what terrorizes people in our country the most and the cause of it, if you just look at it objectively without emotion and look at the statistics, it is white males with high power guns, be they long guns, be they short guns with a lot of magazines, be they any combination. Because the definition of being terrorized is just minding your business and not knowing when a threat is coming and coming to kill you. That's why these children don't want to go to school. See, that's terrorism. And
I don't just say things, Todd. I mean, I don't refer to the NRA as the wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization just because I don't like them. That, to my way of thinking, is a painfully accurate description of exactly what they are.
And you know, the ruble thing, Bob, and I wish you would talk about this some more, and I know you have to go, but, tie that in with Citizens United. Because think about it. Michael Cohen, think about him as the guy you go to for a shell company. You know, you got a few thousand dollars you can play with. More than a few. Money's not really a big deal. You go to this type of person to set up a shell company. Once you have a shell company, you can do a lot of things if you have money. If you have a cash stream, a cash flow, some illegal cash flow, you can do a lot with a shell company. Because then I will give you the opportunity to have another shell company. But my point of bringing this up with Citizens United is that think about foreign money coming, and it could be coming from a shell company from overseas, which is really the way to do it if that's how you want to do it. So you got money coming from shell company A from overseas, going to shell company B here in the United States, filtering through that shell company, going straight through to whoever, a political campaign, whatever, the NRA. Right? This is why I brought it up. You see how that fits?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. Because it becomes almost impossible to track the dirty money.
We have to get rid of it. We need an amendment. This is going to tear. No matter what we do, because the Citizens United, they're going to be two steps ahead. Because now we're getting on top of the gerrymandering issue and the redistricting. Finally, the courts are responding to that.
Well, that probably took a significant setback today.
What happened?
There were arguments in a case called, it's actually two consolidated cases coming out of Texas called Perez. And it has to do with the redistricting that took place in 2011 and the gerrymandering that followed in its wake that was so racist that the federal district court trying the case said, and the Republicans more or less kind of admitted, we did this to water down the black vote. I mean, what the fuck, Your Honor? Wouldn't you? And like they did in North. But anyway, so then the legislature redrew the same maps and said, but this set of maps isn't racist. Because the court helped us draw it. Oh, my God, it's complex and complicated. It's a total mess. But they had arguments on it today in the Supreme Court. And John Roberts jumped on the opportunity to claim that, to reiterate his position that, well, the United States just isn't that racist anymore.
Again, he says this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
He needs to stop with that. Oh, my God. He needs. Where has he been living?
Well, no, that's his modus operandi. He wants to claim that the United States isn't racist, so that the Supreme Court can strike down all the laws that deal with racism, because that is the wet, sticky, stinking dream of the Republican fucking party.
But Bob, the Republicans freed the slaves, and plus the fact.
It gets more.
John Roberts knows there's no racism because he had to swear in that black guy, so he knows there's no racism.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And even managed to screw that up. But it gets better because the Trump administration lawyer and the state of Texas were standing there arguing in favor of the racist reapportionment gerrymandered map, leaving the plaintiff just kind of out in the cold. You know, the people who got their votes gerrymandered.
Right. So wait a minute. You're saying they repackaged the wine in a different bottle, same wine, different bottle. And they said, okay, this is it.
Well, no, it's more like they poured it into a bucket and then took the label off the old bottle and put a new label on the same bottle that says non-racist wine and poured it back in and said, see, Your Honor?
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so there's John Roberts from the bench asking questions of the lawyers, prattling on about, shouldn't Texas get a presumption of good faith? Because, in the Voting Rights Act that John Roberts struck down most of, states like Texas had to get pre-clearance to do shit like this to make sure they weren't being racist, because they were kind of presumed to do racist things because they had a long racist history and really couldn't be proven to not do racist things, because every time they did it, they wound up being racist.
You took the term out of my mouth, and this is what I don't understand. Any sentient Supreme Court justice, right, Supreme Court, has to know. It's obvious. As soon as those guards, the safety guards, were let go in terms of the Voting Rights Act, all those states that were under I'm getting excited. You know what I'm trying to say.
I do.
The ones that were under scrutiny, right? As soon as those bridles were taken off, they went crazy. What more do you need to see? It's obvious.
I know.
So what's the, I don't, and why is he, why, and I don't like his demeanor when he says this shit. John Roberts I'm talking about. I really don't. You know,
but see, it's the kind of lazy lawyer reasoning. It's ends-based reasoning. We don't care about racism, therefore we don't see racism, therefore we're going to presume no Republican governments are racist, and therefore there's no racism. Isn't it beautiful?
Ask Sotomayor. What did she say? Shoot first and ask questions later, or something like that?
The liberal wing of the court wasn't having any of it, and their questions made it clear. But, you know, you've got Ann's boy Neil, and you got dead-eyed John Roberts, and you got Slappy Coke Can Thomas. That's going to go. He's going to say, I got mine. No more racism in this country. Get off the run. Get down there. Get back down there. I don't know if people realize this, but in that square mirrored glass building in Fairfax, Virginia, that's the headquarters of the NRA, there's a chapel. And not just anybody can go into the chapel. That chapel is reserved for grand high mucky mucks of the NRA. and it's an emergency chapel. And so when things like, you know, the shooting at the Waffle House or the shooting yesterday in Tarrant County, Texas, or the shooting today in Dallas happened, there's an emergency light that goes off in Dana Lush's office and Greg Stinkfield's office and Wayne the Peter's office and Cole Leon Noir's office and Ted Nugent's house, and they all congregate in the special emergency NRA chapel, and they fall on their knees and they pray to AK-47 Jesus up there off the cross and looking pissed. And they all pray together, even Cole Leon Noir. And they're holding hands because two people touching in Jesus' name will bring down the power. And they pray and they pray. And they're holding hands and they say, "Dear sweet fake baby Jesus, let it be a Negro, let it be a Muslim, let it be a Mexican. Please, sweet fake baby Jesus, don't let it be one of ours. Let it be a Negro. Let it be a Negro, Muslim, lesbian, Mexican, ISIS member. Oh, Jesus, we claim your power. Oh," you get the idea.
That's crazy, man. You know, you got me laughing. I need to laugh a little bit before people come back. Hey, you know what a lot of people find disgusting? You look at this incident in Antioch, Tennessee, and the suspect, the perpetrator, which, I mean, somehow they knew exactly how long he was in the parking lot, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so they find him, and they know for a fact that he shot all these people.
Yeah.
They know for a fact. And he just walks away. So, and Dylan Roof here in Charleston, he just walks away.
Hey, kid, you want a cheeseburger? How about a Whopper?
How about a Whopper? You know, salad bar? As a matter of fact, let's go to Ruby Tuesday. They have a good salad bar. You can get a little bit of everything. Is that okay with you? Okay. You know, and then you got other folks, you know, who might not look like Dylan Roof. You know, they don't even have any weapons. Haven't even shot anybody. And they just get shot dead just because they're walking around looking all black and suspicious. And you know, we have a lot of debate about this shit. And what it comes down to is that fucked up ass Supreme Court ruling once again that says if an officer feels threatened, they can use deadly force. And remember, that goes for folks who have concealed carry. That's why you got to be scared of these old white women, because they carry. I saw one today, man. You could tell these women who have guns in their purse. I can spot them now. I can spot them. And I'll say to them, I said, "Please don't shoot me." And they look all shocked, and then they look down in their bag, and I'm like, "Yeah, I got you. I know what you're doing." Mm-hmm. I make them think about it. I saw this lady today in Walgreens. And I know she works for the popo, because she works behind the desk. I know who she is. And she was like, "Ooh," she looked like she saw a ghost. She looked up and saw me, and I'm like, "Hi, how you doing?" And I mean, the way she was holding her purse, she had it real tight up. I was like, "Wow. I'm going to tell you something. It's fine. You feel like you need a gun, but whatever. You want to get your little concealed carry, all right, that's your privilege. That's the law now, whatever. But having all these scared people walking around with weapons is not good. I don't think it's a good idea. They're too scared."
Well, it certainly scared the shit out of the police, and that's why they shoot so many unarmed people, because they have to assume that everybody's got a gun and everybody wants to shoot them. Mm. Yeah, I know. Well, we got to get out of here, Todd, but I tell you what, it's been a good conversation. Probably late Thursday night, early Friday morning, I'm going to be brining a couple of butts. I'll season them Thursday, or maybe late tomorrow night, season them up real good. Let them sit in the fridge that way. Brine them Thursday night, all day Friday, and then early Saturday morning, they're going on.
That sounds beautiful.
And I'm gonna make the spicy hot slaw and do up just pulled pork barbecues, because I don't want, like I said last night, I don't want to get burned out on the ribs, man.
No, and I want, next time we talk, I want to ask you about the ribs. And I just want to give a shout out to Scott. Shout out to Colin. And a shout out to Clarence in North Philly. I want to hear his voice one day.
Cool, cool. Well, Todd, you have yourself a good evening. Thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it. Bye now. That's our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. And again, such tremendous thanks going out to everybody who keeps this program on the air. Thanks today to Chad for just knocking down what remained of April. Thanks for making it possible for us to trash Fitzwalker, Stan, triggering Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Ralph's. Thanks to our new subscriber. And this isn't fundraising. It's just a fact. We are one $10 a month subscriber short of meeting Tony and Chico's challenge, in which everybody who subscribed gets their first month subscription doubled. We are one $10 a month subscriber away from that. So thank you. And thank you to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.